I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday. These numbers just astound me. Let me read from the article that got us interested in this topic this hour. Of course, we would naturally be interested because the midterms are going to be here in less than 2 weeks. Almost $4 billion will be spent for this year's midterm election. That's according to the Center for Responsive Politics. That's their projection. And that figure makes this year's election by far the most expensive midterm ever. The candidates and parties alone will combine to spend about $2.7 billion. Outside groups will spend close to $900 million on their own. And, well, it's a whole lot of money. To put it in some kind of perspective, for $4.9 billion will fund a year of cancer research in this country. That's what is currently being spent. Or $3.7 billion, the amount the president asked for to take care of the crisis at the border when so many young people were coming or trying to come into the United States. But we're spending $4 billion on the midterm. So why? Why? And how has legislation, Citizens United, changed the amount of money in campaigns? Where is the money coming from? What's disclosed? What is not disclosed? Russ Choma is our guest this hour. And Russ is money in politics reporter at the Center for Responsive Politics, better known as OpenSecrets.org. He was the investigative reporting fellow at the Transactional Records Access Clearinghouse, and was also a reporter at the Investigative Reporting Workshop, where he reported on green energy and the use of renewable energy funds contained in the 2009 stimulus package. We'll be welcoming phone calls. You know, we're interested in what you think about this incredible amount of money, the ads that you're seeing on television, and most of it is TV advertising. Do you feel as though you're getting a good disclosure of who's paying for the ads? Does it make any difference to you who's paying for the ads? Is this an excessive amount of money? Should we be running elections this way? How have the rules changed? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And Russ, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, hi. Thanks for having
Thank you. $4 billion. I mean, that just, it's unbelievable, isn't it?
Well, it's the trend that we've been on for a while. So, I mean, we were sort of expecting it. But yes, that is a lot of money.
So where is it going?
You know, the bulk of it is going into television ads. I mean, that's the sort of the primary expense for a lot of campaigns. There's a lot of, you know, money that doesn't necessarily make it into TV, but it goes into hiring the consultants and the analysis of when to buy ads. Ad buyers take about 15% cut whenever they make an ad buy. And then there's, you know, the other campaign activities as well. I mean, rallies and T-shirts and buttons and signs and things like that. But most of it's television.
Mm-hmm. So you talk about this year being the most expensive midterm ever. Why is more money going in now?
Well, you know, it's been like I said, it's been a trend, but we're reaching these huge numbers, and I think that there's a couple of factors involved. One, I mean, everything gets more expensive. Two, like, we've got a very divisive election. It's something that people are watching closely, and at least from the party perspective and from Washington's perspective, you know, there's some really crucial races, and people are really, really determined to win. I don't know if necessarily voters feel the same way, but the people who are, you know, running the campaigns feel this is a very, very important election. And then there's the impact of these recent Supreme Court decisions. There's the Citizens United decision from 2010, which opened up sort of the field of outside groups who sort of have no limit on how much they can spend.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a couple of sort of impacts. One is these new groups, they can spend an unlimited amount of money. The second one is the more traditional groups, like let's say a campaign. If you run a campaign, you're now have to face the prospect of there being an outside group that might come in at the last minute and drop a couple million dollars on your race. And so you as the candidate are going to raise a lot more money than you used to, you know, so that you can be ready to fight back. And so it's sort of had a ripple effect.
Yeah.
And then there's another court decision this spring called McCutcheon versus the FEC, which was a case that took off the limits on how much individuals donors can give overall. And that actually really helped the national parties sort of get back in the fundraising game. They had lost some sort of traction after Citizens United. So we've got a couple of court decisions that are sort of driving it as well.
So let's start with those Citizen United decision, no limits for outside groups. Who are the outside groups and how much are they spending?
Well, the outside groups, there's quite a few different kinds of them. And there always have been outside groups and groups that were sort of outside of the campaign and PAC system. And we used to call it soft money. In the mid-2000s, there were groups called 527s. A lot of people probably remember in the 2004 election, the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, mm-hmm. outside group that came in and they attacked John Kerry. But they were much more limited, and they disclosed all their donors, and they didn't really take off. People used them, but they didn't really take off like the outside groups have since 2010. And the Citizens United decision basically allowed a lot more money into the system, and it freed up a lot more groups. And so the major one that we have are super PACs. And these are PACs that all they do is spend money on political ads in races, and they're called independent expenditures. They're explicit political ads that say vote for, vote against, and they can... The super PACs can collect an unlimited amount of money from any donor, and they can be an individual, it could be a corporation, it could be a union, it could be a nonprofit, and they can spend an unlimited amount of money. And as long as they don't coordinate with a candidate, they're supposed to be in the clear. We also have the politically active nonprofits. These are 501c4 groups and 501c6, which is trade associations. They both have stepped in as well, and they can make similar ads, and they can make what are known as issue ads, which are ads that are not as explicitly political. And they don't have to report nearly as much information as a super PAC does. A super PAC still has to tell the Federal Election Commission who they get their money from. These 501c groups don't. What becomes tricky is when they start trading money back and forth, and a 501c will give money to a super PAC, and that'll sort of evade any of the disclosure rules. So sometimes we don't know who the groups that are spending the money are. We only know who the sort of the final group in the chain is, but we don't know where the money originates from.
Yeah. Well, do you have a sense that it is unions, it is corporations, and not really wealthy individuals who are doing the bulk of the contributing to super PACs? Or?
Well, when it comes to super PACs specifically, I think the big fear was corporations and unions.
Right.
And I think that what has really come out of it is extremely wealthy individuals have taken advantage of it. And to a certain degree, they could have spent some of that money previously. But something about Citizens United seems to have sort of made it socially acceptable to write a $5 million check or a $2 million check. And we're seeing lots and lots of these checks get written. And people are being very, very open about it and sort of brazen. Sheldon Adelson, who owns the Venetian Casino in Las Vegas, spent $92 million on super PACs.
Isn't that incredible?
It's just an unbelievable amount of money. And he hasn't been spending money this cycle, which lends – or leads to the question, is he spending money in some way that we can't track? So individuals, wealthy individuals have sort of driven a lot of the money. Corporations, at least publicly traded ones, and ones that have sort of a consumer identity, have strayed away from or steered away from making donations to super PACs, but they could be giving to these 501c groups, and we wouldn't know about it. And unions have been very active with this as well. They've been putting millions of dollars in, not on the scale of someone like Sheldon Adelson, but they have been taking advantage of it as well.
So, Russ, why would you spend or give that kind of money? What are you expecting from that donation?
Well, I think that question is sort of goes to the heart of all this: is that why are these people giving this money? Some people might be giving the money because they are. Very ideologically driven. They really want Democrats to win, or they really want Republicans to win, and they're not looking for anything specific. But over the years, the Center for Responsive Politics has been tracking money in Washington for 31 years. We found that most people who give large amounts of money, whether it's to the candidate, to a party, to an outside group, they're interested in a specific thing, and they're interested in a specific topic, and money tends to give you access. And so we have to assume that most of these people are hoping to get access to the decision makers and so that they can make their cases about things. Sometimes it might be a specific, you know, piece of legislation, or it might be they're after a specific thing that might benefit their organization or their company or themselves. That charge has sort of been leveled a number of times. Someone like Sheldon Adelson, he very publicly has said that he's a strong supporter of Israel, so he wanted to get people elected who he thought would be supportive of policies that he believes are important when it comes to Israel. So, but I think that that's the great question, and that's sort of the underlying driving.
Right.
When it comes to this.
Well, and there's something wrong about it. It's not just on the Republican side, but having to hold, you know, Sheldon Adelson holds court and all the potential 2016 Republican presidential candidates come and sit at his feet and listen to what his ideas are. Well, you know, who's Sheldon Adelson? What about your next door neighbor? Isn't he or she worth just as much those opinions as Sheldon Adelson's?
Right, and I think that when that comes up, and that, I mean, there's a couple of things there, and one of them is that even if Sheldon Adelson isn't saying, "I'll give you $1 million to do X, Y, and Z," you know, you're absolutely right. Anyone who's hopeful that they could get the GOP nomination in 2016 has gone to visit Sheldon Adelson, and there was a big meeting earlier this year, and it was sort of became known as the Sheldon primary because it was everyone was going out there and clearly hoping to make a good impression with him. And he's not the only person who sort of is wielding that power. And so even if it's not an explicit sort of quid pro quo thing, it raises that possibility. But, you know, all this is part of the debate which is going on and which affected the Citizens United decision and the McCutcheon decision about money as a form of political speech.
Mm-hmm.
And is it, are people getting an unfair advantage in the market, or is the market open to everyone? But again, I think that's driving this as well.
Well, then, and nobody's ever really answered this for me, so maybe this study hasn't been done, Russ, but as you know, we're in a pretty heated gubernatorial campaign here in the state of Wisconsin, so particularly in the last week, and they'll be nonstop until November 4. There are so many ads that I don't watch a lot of TV, but I watch the news on TV and a couple, you know, shows during the course of the week. Well, I've seen all of the ads now, and I've not just seen them once, I've seen them at least 20 times, and I can't be atypical. I'm thinking, all right, I've seen the ad. I don't need to see the ad 500 times before November 1st, or November 4th. Does anybody? Why? What? Isn't there a point where it's not worth it to pour that kind of money in?
Well, I think that question has been raised. I think one of the interesting things about this, and this goes to maybe the increasing cost of the election, is that, you know, you've got candidates who are surrounded by people who make their living doing this now.
Right, right.
There are people who made, you know, the 2012 presidential election or 2012 cycle, so if you count the congressional and you count the presidential, it cost $6.2 billion. Somebody got that money. Someone made that money. TV stations, ad buyers, consultants, all these people. And these are the people who are surrounding the candidates on both sides. And they're not necessarily going to be inclined to say, you know, let's not buy that extra $1 million worth of ads.
Right.
And so I think that is a factor. I think the other thing is fear, in that if you don't run those ads and so your opponent does, you know, you're going to be, no one wants to be the person who steps out first.
Mm-hmm.
For fear that something could come in. And this year, one of the things we saw was people pre-buying ads. So, you know, as early as this spring, ad buyers were going around to TV stations in battleground states, and they were pre-buying ads. They didn't even know necessarily who the candidate was going to be.
Goodness.
And they were buying the ad time up in advance. And the goal was just to buy as much ad time as you could so that you'd be ready and so that your opponents would have a hard time buying the ads. And I think that sort of mentality has taken over. Now, the one thing I will say is that, you know, these consultants and sort of analysts who have been hired by the campaigns have gotten very, very, very good at identifying voters and what they're interested in and the types of television programs they watch. I recently was on a discussion panel with someone who had been in this business on behalf of the Obama campaign, and they had talked about how they had gone and they had bought up an extensive amount of ads for Nick at Night, which is you know, television show reruns late at night. Mm-hmm. And they said nobody had thought to do that before, but they had identified a certain type of voter who would come out for Obama who watched classic sitcom reruns late at night. And they felt like that had gotten them a real advantage. And so, you know, you've got people, very smart people, who are sort of parsing the market and figuring out where to spend the money.
And, Russ, how much money is poured into the final 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks before an election, even more?
Well, so we made our projection, and we released it yesterday, that this election will cost almost $4 billion, a little under $4 billion. And we based that on data that was actually collected earlier this year through the end of August. And so we've probably have spent around $3 billion so far. So there's probably another $1 billion which is going to get spent. Now, some of that has to do with the disclosure calendar. Some of that money has already been spent, but the way things are disclosed, it hasn't shown up. But this is sort of prime time. I mean, the amount of and outside spending is a good example of that, because we have sort of real-time disclosure of that. As of yesterday, I think about $663.3 million had been spent by outside groups. By Election Day, $896.8. So there's a little over $200 million left to be spent in between today and Election Day. So those are just the outside groups. So I think that sort of gives you an idea of the amount of ads you have yet to see.
Yeah. You almost get the feeling, because you see one ad and then you see the opposing person's ad and then you see the same ad you just saw a minute ago, that they're throwing money away at the end.
Yeah. And I think that, and so there have been some reporting on the number of ads, and especially in, I mean, you guys have the big gubernatorial race, but in states that have like a hot, you know, gubernatorial race, and they have a really hot Senate race as well. I mean, the ads are just literally wall to wall, and you know, I've heard of campaigns getting complaints from local businesses who say, we can't buy our, you know, ad time.
Right.
You know, we sell washing machines and we can't get on the night, you know, because the ads are just sort of blocking it out. But again, like, I think nobody wants to be the person who says, all right, you know, we've done enough, we'll probably be fine. You know, everyone's sort of keeping their foot on the gas until Election Day.
Russ Choma is our guest this hour, and Russ is the Money in Politics reporter at the Center for Responsive Politics. They just issued a report yesterday, election to cost nearly $4 billion. The figure makes this year's election by far the most expensive midterm ever. So questions to you. We really could spend that money somewhere else, couldn't we? What do you make of all of this? This is just an incredible amount of money, partially due to Citizens United, that decision, which allows more money into the campaign from outside groups. Also, just people feel that they can't have three more ads less than somebody else, because it might give you an unfair you might be disadvantaged if you do that. But isn't it reaching a point where it's just too much money? And do we really, if most of it's going to television advertising, you can tell when it's even and when it's not even, but isn't there a point where it's just way too much advertising? And what about disclosures? Should we know where all the money is coming from? Well, the Supreme Court has said we don't need to now, so one of the reasons we have more money and one of the reasons we don't have disclosure, but this just seems like a whole lot of money. What do you think? Maybe this is the way it should be done. It's America, after all. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Big money in this year's midterm elections. It's our conversation this hour, and Russ Choma is our guest. And our phone number is 800-486-8655. Marty in Milwaukee is our first caller. Hey, Marty.
Hello. Hello, everybody.
Hi.
Kev, I just wanted to comment that, you know, it's funny how nothing is new under the sun. And you would know this, Kathleen. Do you remember Bob Newhart's sketch from about 50-plus years ago, Abe Lincoln versus Madison Avenue?
I sure do.
And I mean, did he call it or what?
Right,
you know?
Right. It's a very – we'll try and work that in before the election sometime. We'll have to play that on the air.
I would love that.
All
right. That would be wonderful to hear. Thanks
yeah,
a lot.
Thanks, Marty. Are you familiar with that routine, Russ?
No, I'm not. But I think that that's a great point. I mean,
absolutely.
This is not new. I think the quantity of the money is definitely new. But there's been money mixing with the politics for a long time.
Yeah. Well, go online after we're off the air and listen to it. You'll get it'll be a highlight of your day, I can assure you. Thanks, Marty, for reminding us of that. Well, we'll get it on the air sometime before the election. Kate in Menominee. Hi. Kate? Go ahead, Kate. Kate calls back. I don't know what's going on. Bob in Fond du Lac. Hi.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, I got a comment about dark money. I'll play the devil's advocate here for a minute.
All right.
If I were an individual who was from, say, a foreign power, China, Russia, and I had the ability to buy a shell corporation that could invest in property in the United States, what would stop me from investing in the election of a candidate who is incredibly detrimental to every other cause in terms of economics or politics than my own cause? In other words, with the role of dark money, why wouldn't the Chinese practically go into American politics to contribute head over heels through untraceable sources and skew the entire election in favor of candidates that would not oppose them in any economic or political sense? I'll take my comment off the air.
All right. Can that happen, Russ?
The scary thing, I think, is that, yes, that could happen. There is nothing that would I mean, the law prohibits it. It would be an illegal thing to have happen, but you'd have to have someone know about it. If the FBI caught wind of it, it would be something they could investigate. They'd take seriously. I think that there have been investigations into this sort of thing, not like an entire country, trying to skew the entire election, but people who are not eligible to give the money, donating the money, and it's been pursued before. But I think that there is a possibility, and we've heard rumors of, concerns about it. I don't think we've heard of any specific knowledge, anyone having specific knowledge of it. But, if the money can go into a super PAC from a shell corporation, and the shell corporation is registered in Delaware, where virtually no information is available about who registered the corporation, that money really could come from anywhere. If there was a reason to suspect, then, that's when someone with subpoena power could get involved and could look into a little bit more. But, I think the concern is not necessarily, there is concern about people from outside the country putting money in, but just inside the country, we don't know who the money's coming from and what those people want.
Monique in Madison, hi.
Hello?
Hi, go right ahead.
Okay, thank you for the program. I just wanted to mention that in some countries, they have limitations on how long the campaigning can happen.
Mm-hmm.
The campaigning is maybe 2 months or 4 months or something of that sort before the election, and it's usually cut off about a week or 2 weeks prior to the actual voting. Since our country seems to be gung-ho on the idea that people, if they have money, can spend as much money as they want, however, in whatever way they want. I think it would be a good idea if we limited the amount of time that the actual campaigning can be going on. This would certainly limit the amount of money that was being spent, and it would spare us from having to see those stupid ads over and over and over and over and over and over again.
Russ.
Yeah, well, I think it's an interesting idea because usually when people talk about this thing, they talk about limiting the money and limiting the amount of time for people to campaign certainly could be a possibility. I used to be a newspaper reporter in New Hampshire, which gets a lot of political interest, and their primary is in August, so they had big fights about who would be the Democratic and the GOP nominee for their Senate seat, but they've had a relatively short general election period. It goes from mid-August to November, which there's one or two other states that have their primaries in August. That's a relatively short amount of time. Now, the flip side is that New Hampshire race is costing a huge amount of money. You can't believe how much money they've been able to spend, even in a relatively short period of time. And in a state that only has 1 million people, they easily... I think the outside money alone is north of $9 million. So $9 for every person in New Hampshire. There's only
goodness
one TV
gracious.
Station there. and they both take up 3 months. So they find a way to spend that money. I think that maybe that could be an option.
Wow. Well, you know, I've been in this business long enough to have had incredible number of conversations on public financing of campaigns. I got to tell you, Russ, there's a phrase that you don't even hear anymore. Well, let's have public financing. We've just sort of given up.
Well, you know, I think that the nail in the coffin for that, at least in its current iteration, was President Obama's 2008 campaign. John McCain opted for public financing of his campaign, and Obama turned it down. And Obama just had so much money, and he spent it, and McCain just had no he was at a serious disadvantage. I don't think he could have raised the money. Obama's a very, very, very good fundraiser. I don't think McCain could have competed, but I think that the memory of that put the nail in the coffin, at least on the federal level for a while, because nobody wants to be John McCain.
Yeah.
They don't want to be the person who maybe does the thing that people want to see happen, but then get caught sort of flat-footed when the other guy doesn't do it. I think the other thing is that, public financing would be very, very – it's a tough sell for a lot of people because it's tax dollars, and people say, I don't want to give my tax dollars to these people to run attack ads against each other. And then also, you know, $4 billion, that would be an even tougher sell politically. And I think that, you know, the response might be, well, then the public financing would give them a lot less. It wouldn't give them $4 billion for this election. And but you know, we've got the, like I was saying before, you know, we've got an entire industry built up around, you know, this. And I think that, you know, you need the people in power to make the decision that we should go to public financing. And you know, when people get elected, even if when they get elected on the platform of campaign finance reform, they get to Washington and they say, well, you know, the system isn't that bad. It worked for me. It got me here. I'm a good guy. And so, you know, when this comes up, I think that one of the things that we feel is that, you know, you're going to have maybe a scandal on the magnitude of order of magnitude of Watergate, which was essentially a campaign finance scandal, before you see a lot of changes in the laws.
Mm-hmm.
Because Watergate is the scandal that sparked a lot of the original campaign finance.
Yes.
And so we may need a scandal of that size again.
Yeah.
And sort of the good news, bad news is that we're also hearing a lot of people saying, even people who are in this industry, even people who are advising outside groups and who are doing the fundraising for these outside groups, who are saying, we're in some really dangerous water and we're sort of primed for a scandal with the way money is being thrown around and the way it's being pursued and what it's being done. There are a lot of people who are saying that they're afraid that they might get caught up in something really ugly, and that may be coming very soon.
Hmm.
People have been predicting a big scandal for a while, though, so it may be a couple of years away.
Well, and Monique makes an interesting point when she talks about how other countries do it. We have to be, maybe I'm wrong here, you would know this, Russ, the only country in the world that goes about campaigning and spending this kind of money. Other countries have other uses for money, don't they?
At least the amount of money spent, right? Nobody comes close to this. Every country is a little bit different. And some countries are have a theoretically similar system, but they don't get nearly as much money as we do. A lot of countries, especially European countries, have form of public financing, and they have much, much stricter limits. And I think that, you know, free speech is a part of this discussion. And I think that on the one hand, as a journalist, I feel it's very important to protect free speech. At the same time, I think that people sometimes take advantage of it when it comes to this conversation. But I think that that's a major thing that is very, very strong in our country and is a major part of the conversation. And in other countries, not that they don't have free speech, but the principle isn't as stark and isn't as maybe hard fought over.
Thanks, Monique, for your call. Daryl in Couderay. Hi.
Hi. I disagree with Citizens United. I feel it's wrong, but I understand why it's in place. It's because it's just an extension of the money system, which has no shame, therefore no guilt, consequently no compassion for anything except the bottom line, which is the profits from the bombs, the bullets, and the bandages. You see, it's the cowboy way, the American way.
All right, Daryl, thanks very much for your statement, your call. Judith in Grand Marsh, hi.
Hi, thank you. What if we had a really good accounting of where money like this could go, and they stood up and said, well, you'll donate to the candidate of your choice, and it would be a statement of the week's money that was donated by people who believe in this president. We're opening a homeless shelter in four states. And the next week he would say his money was going from, because you're supporting the ideas supposedly of that man and or woman, and they stood up and said, you know, we're really going to be fighting for cancer research. All the money donated this week is going to go for a $500,000 cancer research study. And they actually gave it to a good cause, and the statement would be just as effective to me. I would be interested in that. As much as, you know, my uncle is a really good guy, and look how much I love my mom, and, you know, I'm really smart about money. What if, would $2 billion, if one party said, we're going to give free college to every kid in this country that is signed up for it, not that everybody would run and sign up once that plan was put in, but what if it paid for half of the college education in the United States for a year?
Or got rid of student loans or something. Yeah, I mean, she's on to something here. I don't know how the heck you could do it legally, but Russ?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, while we wait for that big scandal to come along so that new rules are written, you know, maybe some more creative approaches to this are necessary or what will change things. But I think that you always get back to that question of nobody wants to be the first one to blink. And I think that the Democrats, one interesting thing about this is that right now the Democrats are the party that is asking for more regulation and are asking for more transparency, and the Republicans are arguing that this is, you know, free speech and it should be left sort of unfettered. But in the 2000s, early 2000s and 90s, the Democrats had a distinct advantage when it came to outside money. And now it's the Republicans who have a distinct advantage. And I think that, you know, in the 90s, you saw Republicans making some of the arguments that Democrats make. And so I think it, you know, it goes back and forth. But more recently, you know, there were a lot of Democrats who, you know, in the 2012 election, the first one after Citizens United said, you know, at least big Democratic donors said, we don't want to play this game. We're better than this. We're not. You know, I don't care if Sheldon Adelson gives $92 million. I'm not going to perpetuate this by giving money myself. And a lot of Democratic donors sat out the 2012 election. And I think at the end, some of them felt that that was a mistake, that they had maybe lost ground because they could have stepped up and done something. And I think other ones saw some of the success that outside groups had and thought, well, maybe it's not so bad after all. So I think that we've seen a lot of Democrats change their opinion on it. People who once were saying, you know, taking sort of a principled stand, saying, well, maybe we should give it a try. So I think that's like an underlying sort of dynamic, is that nobody wants to be the one who makes that misstep, even if it's the sort of right one, you know, morally or ethically the right one, if it means that they might lose the election.
And in terms of getting Citizens United reexamined or overturned, what do you think about that, Russ?
I think that, you know, the Supreme Court had the option to reconsider Citizens United. There was a case that came out of Montana that they could have picked up. And a lot of people were thinking that maybe they would because, you know, a key component of Citizens United is that said, well, you know, you can have this unlimited money, but transparency is key. I mean, that was part of the decision. And we quickly saw that there was a lack of transparency. And so people thought, well, maybe they'll take this Montana case and that'll give them an opportunity to sort of clear things up a little bit. And they didn't. And then we had this McCutcheon decision, and it seems like there's a trajectory they're sort of following. And I think that we're going to likely see some more court, at least cases brought to the court and probably following the same, you know, vote that loosens the system even more.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that as long as we have this current Supreme Court, we're not going to see a serious reconsideration of
right.
it.
Judith, thanks for the call. Milt in Wausau. Hi.
Hello.
Hello, Milt. Go right ahead.
Okay. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
I'm part of a Wausau group, and it encompasses only the city of Wausau, called Move to Amend. We got a petition circulated in 56 days. We needed 1,952 signatures, and we got almost 2,700.
Mm.
And what it is, it gets a ballot initiative, which is on the ballot for November 4th, requesting that there be a constitutional amendment passed nationally to get the money out of the politics, get control of it, make it transparent, also to that human beings, not corporations, limited liability companies, unions, nonprofit organizations, and similar associations are endowed with constitutional rights. Money is not free speech, and therefore regulating political contributions and spending is not equivalent to the limiting of free speech. And it's we're asking for a yes vote on that. It's part of a national movement. There's been 661 municipalities throughout the United States that have completed this petition drive, and 41 municipalities in Wisconsin, and there's 12 more on the ballot for November.
Mm. So it will appear on the ballot in how many places in Wisconsin, do you know?
There will be 12 total.
12.
And Wausau is unfortunately city only, because when we started this thing, we didn't know how tough it was going to be or how big it was going to be and how much work it was going to be. And as it turned out, people came out of the woodwork to help with it,
mm-hmm.
and it worked well.
So what happens if people vote yes or if they vote no on this? Then it's just an advisory?
It is strictly an advisory.
Right.
And what it's intended to do is to bring pressure to our elected officials and
right.
Force them to start a movement to get a constitutional amendment.
Mm-hmm. Russ, what do you say?
Well, you know, this fall, a constitutional amendment actually came to the floor of the Senate that would reform campaign finance laws, and it failed to get the 60 votes you need to get anything through the Senate, and a vote of 54 to 42 that went pretty much party line. But I think that a constitutional amendment route would go around the Supreme Court, and so you know that may be an option. I think that you know, despite the what I was just saying, that, you know, there is sort of, you know, the Democrats feel one way and the Republicans feel the other way. I think everything polls, you know, everything we can see shows that most Americans, regardless of what party they're involved with, are offended by too much money in the system. And people have a funny way of saying, well, it's okay for my candidate, but not the other guy. But generally, overall, people don't like money in politics. They don't like the influence that and the whole thing is distasteful to most Americans. So I think that there is, on the one hand, there is a lot of interest, and maybe we are getting a little closer, like the constitutional amendment that was brought to the floor. At the same time, there are still some really big hurdles to it. And I think that campaign finance is also a topic which, if you ask people, most people will say that they don't like the current situation. But if you ask them to rank it on their list of priorities, it tends to slip down the list. And there have been a couple people. There's a PAC, a super PAC, that was created this year by a guy named Larry Lessig, who's a professor at Harvard. And it's a super PAC that will intervene in races to support candidates who say their number one priority is campaign finance.
Oh, really?
And they intervened in the New Hampshire Senate race in the GOP primary, and they backed a candidate who was socially very, very conservative. But he said his number one priority was campaign finance. If elected, this is what he would be all about. And the hope was that he would win the nomination and he would at least steer the general election towards this topic. And if elected, maybe he would do something. When the super PAC started spending in the race, the guy had 9% in the polls. And on primary day, he had 6%. Mm-hmm. And they spent over $1 million in the race. The PAC is called Mayday PAC, and they're not giving up. They're continuing to spend money. They said that after that they were going to sort of reevaluate their strategy, but the goal is to raise money to change the debate.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, there are some people out there doing some things, and maybe campaign finance will move up the list of people's priorities. But I think for right now it's one of those things where everyone says that they worry about it, but when it comes to what will you do about it, there are not as many people who are standing up.
Right. Well, thank you, Milt, very much for your call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. We're talking about a report released yesterday by the Center for Responsive Politics titled Election to Cost Nearly $4 Billion, Topping Previous Midterms. Russ Choma is our guest. Russ is now the Money in Politics reporter at the Center for Responsive Politics. And we have a couple lines open. We've been crowded all hour, but you could get through right now. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Judges are expected to be impartial interpreters of the law, but what happens when they enter the political fray? Today on Central Time, a guest looks at what happens when judges go campaigning. Also, a look at the news of the day, Central Time after 3 o'clock. Phone calls, 800-486-8655, and Kate in Menominee. Hi, Kate.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call, Kathleen.
Sure,
Kate. Love your show.
Thanks.
My point about all this is that, you know, they're spending a lot of money on the ads, but what is in the ad is very little substance. So most of the people calling in have got it right. They know what they want. They know what they want to hear. This just serves very few people. And I'm all for spending money, but it's on what am I spending it? It has no substance in the ads, you know. A lot of times I can't even make it through the ad, or I kind of go, really? That's really what you have to say? You know, and so my thing is that there is no substance, and it only serves very few people, and that's the saddest part of this whole thing. So I'll just listen off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Kate. Russ, what do you say?
Well, you know, I can't disagree with that. You know, right. A lot of these ads are mean and kind of dumb in a lot of cases. And I think that there seems to be like an increasing trend towards that. There have been some very bizarre ads this year that don't really seem to make a lot of sense. But I think that, you know, another part of that is, you know, campaigns are also, and this is part of why they're becoming more expensive, and you know they're becoming so technical, and they're you know, they, on the one hand, they are sort of throwing money around, but at the same time, like I was saying with the Obama ad buying people who are analyzing every single bit of the market, and I think that when it comes to these negative ads, I think that it's, and this is not, this moves a little bit beyond our area of expertise, but I think it's something that campaigns have decided work. Campaigns in these ads.
Oh, yes.
They decided it work.
Right.
And, you know, I don't think the idea is always to inform you. It's definitely not to inform you. It's maybe just to plant an idea in your head or to, you know, there's theories that negative ads suppress voters. You know, voters get frustrated and they tune out of the election. And so, you know, I think that, you know, I can't explain why some of these ads air, but the people who run them feel like they're working.
Well, the whole thing is just so ridiculous, isn't it, that you're spending almost $4 billion to run mean and dumb ads to elect people to make decisions that will guide the future of our country, for heaven's sake. Is there something wrong with this picture?
Well, you know, I think you could argue there is, and the thing that just sort of occurred to me when you're saying this is that, you know, we've got these ads on our television now, but an increasing, I mean, they're also spreading. You know, they're going online, and you're going to see them on the websites, and you're going to see them on Facebook, and you're going to see them everywhere. So I think that turning your TV off is not even enough anymore. And those new types of ways to spend money are also cause problems with disclosure as well. Like, they're not as clearly, it's not as clear what you have to disclose, and so that creates whole new headaches.
John in West Bend, hello.
Hi, Kathleen. I just had a question. Chief Justice Roberts said when Citizens United was passed that Citizens United would not be a problem because there could be no outside coordination between campaigns and outside groups. And I'm wondering if the court is being held to that statement and whatever happened to it.
Well, that's a very good question. And You know, it's this is a I think a frustrating area of campaign finance is that, you know, the oversight body for campaign finance is the Federal Election Commission, which is a very dysfunctional organization right now. It's run by six commissioners, three of whom are Republican, three of whom are Democrat, and on virtually every issue of substance, they tie 3-3 when they're asked a question. And so when you have questions about a campaign and is the campaign coordinating, for instance, you're going to run into a little bit of a wall, and you're going to have a hard time getting a decision. And so there's a lot of things that are not clearly defined. Just last month, I believe, the FEC finally was able to present their rewritten rules in the wake of Citizens United, which happened in 2010. Like, they've finally been able to reach some sort of consensus about what their rules will be. And so it's a big question mark. And there haven't been any major court decisions that define coordination. We've seen instances where someone's parents start a super PAC for them, their spouse starts a super PAC for them, or their fiancé. John Huntsman, who ran for president in 2012, his father started a super PAC. You have to think that, I don't know, sort of a common sense definition of coordination. If your parents or your fiancé is running the super PAC, you might think that there's coordination. But there, as far as the legal definition that currently exists, there has to be an explicit conversation in which, the candidate specifically says, I want you to run an ad at this time. And that hasn't really been tested in court, and we don't have a strong oversight group right now. And so it's definitely a murky area. Now, the counter to that is that in the 2012 election, both sides, the Republicans and Democrats, raised and spent in the same neighborhood. And when it came to presidential politics, each side raised about $1 billion. The Republicans raised a little bit more. But President Obama raised most of the money inside his own campaign, and so he didn't have to coordinate with an outside group. He could spend the money any way he wanted. Mitt Romney's campaign was not very good at fundraising. They raised about half of, or a little more than half of what Obama's campaign did, and they had to rely on these outside groups. And there was a lot of discussion that of how things sort of fell apart for the Romney campaign, and how in Ohio there were some, you know, while the Obama campaign could directly coordinate, you know, get out the vote and voter outreach and polling, Romney's campaign couldn't do that. And these outside groups were supposed to be doing it, and they didn't necessarily do a good job. And there was a disconnect over how the conservative side would respond to the liberal attacks on Bain. You know, the campaign said that they wished that the outside groups had gone after it. The outside groups after the election said, well, we didn't know we were supposed to go after it more. So there's some evidence that there was actually kind of a barrier there, and that they weren't communicating. This election, one of the big things, this was made fun of sort of endlessly on The Daily Show. Mitch McConnell, for instance, put out a video on YouTube of just shots of him just staring at the camera, sitting at a desk working. And the point of this video was that outside groups could take the video and they could make an ad with it. He wasn't coordinating with them. They weren't coordinating with him.
Oh,
he was
interesting.
Just putting something out there and they might use it. And so, you know, even when there isn't coordination, people find a way.
Right. Yeah. One more call, and then that's all we have time for. Lori in Lake Geneva. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm so glad you're talking about this. Unfortunately, I wish it's talk, and I wish we could do more about it. But as far as the argument of free speech, I guess my remark is this. Somebody that's making $58,000 annually versus somebody that's making a six or seven figure salary annually does not have, there's no equity in that fair speech. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So I guess that's my point, that we can't really use that argument that it's free speech because it's not fair free speech.
Russ, we got about 40 seconds.
I think that's a great, an interesting point. We look at the demographics of donors. Most Americans don't give any money. The number of Americans who give more than $2,600 to a political campaign or committee is less than 0.2%. And when we talk about the high end of the scale, when we talk about people like Sheldon Adelson, and the money they give, if you had a seven-figure salary, you're still not going to have enough money to compete with some of the donations he makes. So I think that that is a valid point that's out there. And there, when it comes to who gives money, it's a very, 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 very small number of Americans.
Thank you very much, Lori, for the call. And Russ, thank you. Got a lot of interest in this topic this hour. Thank you. Our pleasure, and we'll look forward to having you again. Russ Choma, our guest this hour. He is the Money and Politics reporter at the Center for Responsive Politics. Go to our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can see the report they issued yesterday. It's a whopper, election to cost nearly $4 billion, the most expensive midterm election in history. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this hour and for doing on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. Somebody did mention the Bob Newhart, Abe Lincoln, Madison Avenue. It's a very, very funny sketch, and so we'll find a time and we'll let you know when we'll air that. If you've never heard it, it's very good. We'll do that next week. Monday is All Things Political. Mike Gushey will be with us, and we'll be concentrating a lot on the midterm elections, so I hope you'll join us for that, and have a really great rest of the day. Great conversations are ahead. Thanks for listening.